Okay, good morning, everybody. We are continuing on with the book of Yonah, Sefer Yonah. We are in the middle of chapter 3, Perek Gimel. We just learned last week, we discussed the Yonah coming into town. It was a 3 days walk. We discussed what does that mean, the challenge of 3 days walk, and that Yonah was heard right away, that it was understood that Yonah was speaking on behalf of God. And it was MS, and they followed in his ways. This is exactly what Yonah was concerned about. According to some of the Mefarshim, Yonah's hesitation to going to Nineveh to begin with was because he knew they would follow him and do tshuva, and that would make the Jewish people look bad. And that is one interpretation, and that fits very nicely here because that's exactly what happened. Is exactly what happened. They listened. They listened better than the Jews would listen. The Jewish people aren't such great listeners all the time. And now today we're going to try to understand how exactly they changed, what did they do, and why they do it. But let's begin by closing up this question. Why did they believe Yonah? I believe we gave one answer last week. On Monday, we discussed the reason why they believed him was the Abarbanel writes, Nikarim Divrei Ha'emes, that the way that Yonah spoke, the way that Yonah walked, and the way that he talked, right, is that he walked the walk, he talked the talk. It was very clear and evident from his words and from his persona that he was a man of God, that he was a Navi Hashem, he was not a Navi Sheker, and that he was telling the truth. And that's why they took his words very sincerely and to heart. However, others point out the following. It is not very clear here from the text where exactly this comes from, but the Medrash writes is that the king of this nation, the king of Nineveh was whom? Anyone know who the king was? According to the Medrash? None other than Paro Melech Mitzrayim. Again, if you look at the Parshas Beshalach, where the sea split and all the Mitzrayim were drowned in the sea, it says that it's unclear how you read one of the psukim where it says either everybody lo nishar ad echad, that either one interpretation of that is lo nishar ad echad, that not even one person was not left, meaning everybody was killed in Kriyas Yamsuf, or lo nishar ad echad means lo nishar, everybody died except for echad, except for one person. And the Midrash points out who was that person that would be left alive. That was Paro. Because more than greater suffering for Paro would have him to be alive and to witness the Jewish people survive Kriyas Yamsuf as opposed to his nation and then thrive in the Midbar and ultimately enter the land of Israel. That would be the greatest revenge for Paro. So the Medrash says, according to one opinion, that he was alive. And then the Medrash puts these two stories together and says, oh, who was the leader of Nineveh? Why would the leader of Nineveh be so accepting of this, you know, nevuah, this prophecy that his nation is going to be destroyed in 40 days if they don't shape up? It must be somebody that has a past history with the Jewish people, and specifically with the God of the Jewish people, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it must be Paro. And that's why they listened. That's amazing. It's an amazing medrash. Whether you take it literally, again, there's some of you that are going to say, then Paro has to be who knows how old. You're right. That makes Paro, I don't know, 1,000 years old, 1,500 years old. That's pretty old. And we just learned the Parshas Bereishis, and nobody lives past 120, which again, within itself, is a challenging pasuk because Noach lived past 600, and the 120 age seems to be very flexible until after post Torah. Moshe lived to 120, but Aaron and Miriam lived past 120. They all died within the same year, and Aaron and Miriam were older. Pinchas might have lived till older. So it's unclear when that rule starts, but to live to like 1,000, that's pretty old. So it could mean that he was a descendant of Paro. There was a Mesorah here, where somebody that was very fluent in the teachings of the Torah and very familiar with the Torah itself. Therefore, it was self-evident that his nation would need to follow in these rules.
Rabbi, can I ask you a question?
Sure, Nathan, go ahead.
Was Jonah proclaiming where he was in the city that he was in before he went to Nineveh?
He never shared this anywhere else. No. But remember, he ran away. He didn't want to share it. He only started this prophecy in Nineveh.
So why did Hashem not have him start his prophecy in the city where he was, since the Jews were so bad?
I mean, even if Hashem wanted him to, Yonah refused. But it was really Nevuah specifically not for the Jewish people, but specifically for Nineveh. That's why he didn't. You know, it was only for them. It doesn't make the Jewish people look good, but it's meant for Nineveh.
It just seems strange that Hashem would be more concerned about Nineveh than he would be about wherever it was that the Jews were at that time.
Right. The Jewish people were in Israel. It's not against the Jewish people, because the Jewish people had their own prophets and had their own people, you know, throughout history. Yeshayahu was around during this time. Yirmiyahu a little bit later. They all were prophesying about the Jewish people, that they have to shape up. They got a lot more time. They didn't get 40 days. Yirmiyahu and Yeshayahu were prophesying for decades, saying, come on, guys, if you don't do better, you don't change your ways, the Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed. That is a fact, right? And we have very big books of Sefer Yeshayahu and Yirmiyahu that write about this, and they were not listened to. They were given a lot more time. They had many, many prophets. Yehu. They had a lot of different prophets that tried unsuccessfully. It wasn't their fault. It was the Jewish people didn't listen, or the majority of them wouldn't listen. Yeah, Mendy?
Rabbi, I think I also read, when I went over the Parsha, that the 120 years at the end of the Parsha, refers to the amount of years that was going to be before Hashem brought the flood. It wasn't really, when it talks about dying, it means the period of time that they would have till the whole world would be wiped out.
Right. That was, again, that's very similar actually to our story here, because again, there's a certain amount of time that's given, that's allotted. And Hashem's saying, you have time right now to change. It's up to you. Nineveh, 40 days. Dor HaMabul, 120 years. Right. That's one interpretation, Mendy, of that pasuk, which again takes it, you know, in a completely different way. And then we have no source for what the oldest Admei Aviestrim has no source anymore. Mendy, you just undid that source, right? But that's okay, because you have people to back you up. But there are similarities here between the story of Yonah and Noah. Obviously, you have the boats and the water. You have the doves. You have a person named Yonah. You have a dove named Yonah. You have a lot of similarities between the two stories. Okay, let's continue. Pasuk 5. Vayaminu anshe Ninve belokim. Vayikra utsom. They called the fast day. They heeded the words of Yonah, and they called the fast day. They all wore sackcloths, the old and young together, the adults and the children, all wore mourner's clothing and fasted. To the extent, this matter reached the king of Nineveh, he got up from his throne, Vayavur Adarto, he took off his cloak, his majestic kingly coat that he would wear. Me'alav, Vayichasak, Vayeshev al ha'efer, he put on a sack also, a sackcloth, and he sat in ashes. Right? So the king shows, I am with you in this. Right? Which is very, very important. Right? We'll read the Mefarshim about this, how this was a major stepstone for the people of Nineveh to change. The leader is the one that is not just saying to change, but joining the people in this. It's very important. This highly contrasts a different story in Tanakh. There's a different story in Tanakh about sackcloths and afer, sak ve'afer, where the king did not act this way. Anyone familiar with a story like that in Tanakh? Okay. Mordechai and Esther. What happened? Mordechai hears about Haman and Mordechai, Haman and Achashverosh's deal. And Mordechai, in the beginning of the fourth chapter of Megillas Esther, wears sak ve'efer, ash on his forehead, and he wears a sack. And Esther hears about this, and through her messengers, sends clothing to Mordechai to change. Why? Ki lo yilbash sak ve'efer, you can't wear sak and efer in the palace of the king. It's not allowed. And that's very strange. Why would Ahasuerus not allow people to wear mourner's clothing? It's, again, this is an extreme circumstance where the Jewish people are going to be decimated. We're not asking Ahasuerus to change his clothing, but why can't other people recognize that there are sad times in the world? There are sad times, people die, and then people would sit shiva. People wear sackcloth. That was common back then when people are going through challenging times. But Achashverosh made a rule, a law. It was Das HaMelech, that nobody could wear sack the Efer in the palace of the king. And that was the whole machlokes. And then finally, that's where Mordechai convinces Esther to go before the king unannounced and risk her life.
Rabbi.
Yeah.
So how does the king of Nineveh figure this out? It would seem even Adam didn't figure out the concept of tshuva himself. He had to learn it from his own son, basically. How did he, especially a sackcloth and ashes seems to be a very Jewish theme. How did he get there?
Yeah, so it wasn't him. It was the people of Nineveh first.
But even the people.
Okay, so let's see what the Mefarshim say. Just one more point. Achashverosh versus this king. Achashverosh lived in like this bubble where everything had to be happy. There could be no negativity or sad tidings in the world of Achashverosh. He lived in a fantasy world. It was fantasy island for Achashverosh. That's where he lived. This Nineveh, this king of Nineveh, whoever he might be, understood, right, that there are times where we need to mourn, where we need to face reality, or we always need to face reality and be with the people. So now let's look at the Mefarshim over here. So the Chidah points this out, that it was after the king himself was able to be mashpil himself and go off of his throne, was he able ultimately for the people to do tshuva? That caused like a ripple effect amongst the city for people to change. The Radak writes, Hevir kruz ba'ir ala tshuva, v'yaf al pi sha'am hayu nizhar me'elayim, hosif od inoy ha'behema, v'sheves ha'geza. V'sheves ha'geza. So this caused word to spread. No, we have social media today that makes things a little bit easier, but word spread very, very quickly. The king got off his throne. This is something that, we must be taking seriously. and we'll see what exactly they did. So is it just, you know, you want to do tshuva. So somebody says, okay, you got to do tshuva. So what are you going to do tshuva? Oh, I'll just change my clothes. Is that really tshuva? Does that really work? I'll change my clothes and that would be it. I'll start wearing, I don't know, a bekesha. I'll put on a hat. I'll wear
a start.
It's a start. So
to get you into the mood.
Right. So it gets you into the mood. I'm not saying that a bekesha get, okay, yeah, everyone has to know their own, you know. You know, I'm working on davening. So sometimes, yeah, if you're working on your davening, then maybe it's helpful to wear a jacket to shul. It puts you in the mood. It gets you, you know, set up for this, that it's to take it more seriously, to make it more, it doesn't have to be a jacket. It could be something nice. You know, happens to be, I think it's hysterical that everybody is wearing long coats. I'm not hysterical. I think it's just, it's like when you look at the shul and it, on Shabbos morning and the tent outside, most people are wearing like long jackets, long coats to shul. And it looks like everybody became like Hasidim overnight because everyone's wearing like these long frocks to shul. You know, some look like frocks more than others. Okay. So, okay. It's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. It just looks, it's a nice scene. It's a funny scene to see. Now, so this wasn't where they stopped. Mendy's correct. They continue on. Vayas ek. Number one, in Pasuk Zion, Vayas ek. They scream out, Vayomer. Mitam hamel, Vimer bin invay, Mitam hamel, Chukdo lovely more, Hadam of Habema, Babakar, Atzon, Al Yit Amu Meuma, Al Yiru, Val Mayim Al Yishtu. Number one, we're going to have to address this probably next week. Who fasted here in this Pasuk? They declared a fast day. Who's fasting in this Pasuk? The people are fasting. And who else? Ha'adam, v'ha'behema, ha'bakar, v'ha'tzon. Not just the people are fasting. This wasn't just a fast day for them, but you also are not to feed your dogs, your sheep, your cattle, your fish, your canary. The animals were also part of this fast day. They were also not allowed to eat. They should not graze, no grass, and they should not even drink water. So now this is very challenging. You mean Rabbi, to tell me?
Rabbi?
Yes, Milty.
Why is a behema before a bakar v'tzon? Bakar v'tzon belongs to man. So I would think, just like you have certain rules that you have to feed your own bakar v'tzon even on Shabbos to make sure they're fed and those things, and you have to take care of them, I would think that bakar v'tzon should come before a wild beast. Why is the behema listed right after man?
Ah, that's an interesting. I have to look throughout Tanakh and see how they're quoted. Also, is it usually it's sonu bakar, right? Isn't it sonu bakar? It's a good point.
It's bakar and son here.
I know. Usually, it's sonu bakar.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point, number one. Okay, I don't know. And secondly, behema, right. Behema usually refers to like animals that are just, you know, wandering around. I don't know. We have to look into that.
Okay.
I don't think I saw anything in the Mefarshim, but let's see if we could find, you know, this addressed over here. Good point. I don't know. You know, and then the responsibility of them. Why are animals responsible for something that man did? By the way, that is another connection to our parsha. In our parsha, Parsha's Noach, that's very clear. Ki hishkis kol basar lefanai, that the animals were also not doing what they're supposed to do. They were breeding with other animals of other types. right? And they were also corrupt in their own ways. There is, you know, something to say. I think there's even an article about this. I don't remember where, you know, but I would say metaphysically, Kabbalistically, animals, if the people are doing bad, right? If the people are doing wrong, there's a Zohar about this, then animals act beyond their element. They go beyond their boundaries. And what's interesting is that at the end of, after Noah comes off the Teva, he makes a bris. Hashem makes a bris with him. And part of the covenant is that everybody goes back to their mishpechosehem. And the bris is not just with the people, but it's also with the animals. And Rashi points, at least according to Rashi, Rashi points out that Hashem made a bris with them, that they breed only with their animals, right? And even further, some say that it means that they, to a certain degree, if we don't bother them, they don't bother us, right? They go where they go, and we go where we go. And we stay off, and we don't bother one another. So we do see, I guess, an element in the Mabul where animals are taken to task for certain things that they may do. But I think we need to explore this a little bit more. So let's learn one last pasuk. Vayitkasu sakim ha'adama bema. They put the sakim on. Animals also, I guess they had animal-shaped sackcloths. The yikru, this took a lot of time. I don't think you had clothing for animals back then. Back today, you can go to the store. There are animal clothing stores. Back then, I don't know. They had to sew these together to make a four feet. I don't know. Okay, it just sounds like so interesting. Vayikru elokim b'chazakam. And here we go. It wasn't just that they wore clothing, but they changed their clothes. They called out to God. They davened. Vayashuvu ish midarko hara'ah. And they returned from their evil ways. Umina chamas asher bechapeyam. And from the chamas, from the injustice, from the stealing, the immoral acts that they did in their hands. So it wasn't just left with the externals. They davened, they changed their ways, midos, and then they returned the stolen objects that they had. If you recall, chamas is the reason why the Mabul happened. It was the stealing that got Hashem the tip to scales and caused the Mabul to happen. Right, so we see a lot of similarities here between these two stories. Rabbeinu Yonah writes in Shari Tshuva, the book about Gates of Tshuva, that when it comes to Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, it's not enough just to say sorry to Hashem for doing something wrong. You also need to, you know, you also need to return the stolen objects. You also need to apologize to one's friend. It's not just enough to apologize to God. And he quotes a psukim in Yonah that express this. That's number one. The Chovas Levavos points out what Mendy said. The Chovas Levavos, Ravina Bachaya, points out in his Shahar Tshuva that one of the ways to do tshuva is to begin to do tshuva is to change one's clothing. The externals affect the internals. And our actions affect our insides. And that is very, very clear over here. So Bezrat Hashem tomorrow, next week, we will explore more about the role of the animals in the chait of Nineveh. And again, I think we'll have to extrapolate a little bit, understand more about what happened in our Parsha's Noach. Why, and if animals are responsible for their actions, we just say they're not. And why was that necessary and incumbent upon Nineveh to do tshuva? And why was that part of the tshuva process?
Rabbi.
Yes.
If this really was Paro, was this number one either a redemption for him because he didn't do what he was supposed to do back in the Mitzrayim? Or was this a getting back at the Bnei Yisrael?
Yeah.
I mean, so what was his? I mean, that was very hard to understand.
Yeah, so is this like him, or is this redeeming from him? So I was going to leave that off to the end because we'll see that it's not clear whether Nineveh stayed with the tshuva or they returned to their evil ways a little while later. That's why we'll need to explore that also. And that is a very important factor in this, in understanding this story over here. Okay, I wish everybody a great day and a healthy and safe week.
Everybody, please join us at 1 o'clock.